Morning, everybody. So we are doing, welcome to Chatting Between Takes. We are doing the first ever car cast right now. And I hope you bear with me because we're going to take a hit on sound quality here. There's no way we can't. My belief is that there's a different vibe, a different energy. I'm driving my 1985 Porsche here with the engine in the back, whirring up at around 4,000 RPM right now, and I'm on my way to the racetrack, Canadian Tire Motorsport, for my first ever full track weekend since like 2006 or 7. I am so fucking excited. It is ridiculous. I want to talk about this because this is huge for me, and I have pendulumed in a way that I think has been sometimes unhealthy, too much focus on one thing. So, and that, for me, that's my career. So in my 20s, I basically just said, I'm just into my acting. Now, luckily that included staying in a certain kind of physical condition, so my karate got good and stayed good. But generally speaking, I wasn't really into anything else. I think that that is a very unhealthy way to live. And for me, what's important, and this is what I'm throwing out, I'm starting right with this. If you don't have something that you love, like, sometimes I'm a jack of too many trades, but if you don't have like five good things going on, and you're not an Olympian, or like, you know, Bill Gates, then I'd suggest there's happiness to be found in spreading out the time a little to things that are great. And for me, it has to do with intensity. It can ease an intensity that might not be useful, especially for me as I get older. You know, I'm 40 years old, and too much intensity is a bit of a young man's game. And that's why I say that thing about the Olympic athlete. I mean, if you're not already the champion of the thing you're doing by age 30, then keep doing it by all means and do it the best you can for yourself. But maybe spread the time and the love a little, you know? And I say that because, I mean, I've been shooting the show Saving Hope. It is fantastic. And I've been doing this recurring on it. I'm doing a number of episodes. But the one gift it's given me is a little bit of time, because I'm not one of the leads, to do other things. I got my guitar like right up to spec so that it just kind of plays perfectly. My brother and I are going to see David Gilmour. So like, even the fact that I love that much, David Gilmour that is, brings me joy and excitement. Then I'm all excited about my car and I'm constantly tuning just to the suspension. I can't wait to read this book I'm reading and have a bath later on. There's just a lot of things that are happy making. And what I'm learning over time is how to make those things that I don't have to be very good at. You know, even today at the track, I mean, yeah, I'm a good driver and you guys hear me go on and on about it. I'm trained and I'm into it, so hopefully I'm good. But it's not that important. I mean, it is not important. I am not a race car driver. Today is technically called a driver's education event. And yes, we're on a racetrack, but I actually take it as such. Like, I'm there to wring out from my car its race car potential through an educational approach, which doesn't mean not hanging the ass end out where possible, which doesn't mean not scrubbing all the rubber off my tires and getting up. I don't know how fast, I haven't done this track yet. But you know what I'm saying? It's the kind of thing that's like, am I really gonna benefit from this? If I'm, well, especially on my first weekend out, I go for the extra second time decrease and put my car into the wall. I'm not sponsored. And I guess my question is, where are you putting your car into the wall when laying off the 1 second on the first weekend, metaphorically, might be a better day? Because really, this is all we're talking about, is better days. You know, better days. Barring insanity, what puts someone over the edge? Too many shit days. I mean, really, let's think about it. Like, our world's a pretty amazing and also pretty gross place. And the grossness, again, aside from the insanity aspect where there's just actually a wiring that's wrong, but we know there's nature and nurture. And when you're into nurture, where is our world? And by the way, I'm not saying the responsibilities with the world, because I truly believe, I heard this the other day, that 70% of how you perceive the world is as a result of the conversation you're always having with yourself. And my contention would be that that's a low number. You know, that's a low number. I know so many people who have great fucking, they have houses I don't have. I don't own my own home. You know, they got jobs that earn them more a year than I earn, or the same. And they got fucking problems. They're having an inner conversation with themselves. You know, my fucking hip's off. Fuck that. Life is great. Life is great. Not every day, not every second of every day. But what's the inner conversation? My inner conversation is never going to fucking replace a good thought with a bad one through habit. Why? Because I created a new habit. Because I used to do that. If you're going to the negative, it's your fault. Oh, what? If you're going to the negative, it's your fault. Because it's your choice. So let's not call it your fault. Let's just call it your choice. You're choosing to see. It's this morning, I have three pairs of sunglasses in my car. If I sound like a Ponzi spoiled motherfucker, again, I don't have kids, bitches, that I know of. Oh, you can have three pairs of sunglasses when you don't have kids. So I am trying on the more rose ones, then I try on the more cycling, like flat ones, and then I settled on some brown Ray-Bans, some Wayfarer 2s. So I got to choose my lens. It actually 100% changes how I see the day. So I am seeing today, actually seeing, literally seeing today, through a different pair of glasses. Chuck C. To all you friends of Bill out there, check it. It couldn't be clearer what I'm saying. What glasses are you going to put on today? And for me, a big part of that is going, there's anything I could do this weekend. I'm going to come out to the racetrack. I'm going to be out on the track for a total of 100 minutes. And it's not exceedingly cheap. Not unlike the David Gilmour tickets. I'm paying some okay, like, you know, I paid for good seats. I see about one concert every 4 years, and David Gilmour is my favorite guitarist in the world. That's a no-brainer. That is a no-brainer. I wasn't going to pay the, like, $2,400 VIP package scalper price for front row. The night before, I was like, I'm going to fucking pay whatever it takes to get front row. It's David Gilmour. I want to see his hands. And then I saw what the prices were, and I was like, nah, we're not going to see his hands other than on the big screen. And I'm going with my brother, who, by the way, 28 years ago, gave his 12-year-old little brother, if you're following along, that's me, a ticket to Pink Floyd, their first reunion tour. Pink Floyd had been broken up, not long, by the way, since like 1981, 82, after Final Cut. So if you think about it, like, the reunion tour, it was kind of a reunion because, you know, Roger Waters wasn't playing with them. It's interesting listening to David Gilmour versus listening to Pink Floyd, because David Gilmour is, for me, the sonic driver of Pink Floyd now, but it does lack something without that complete sort of... What am I trying to say here? That complete soundscape that is as a result of, I think, Roger's sort of demented, awesome, insane imagination. And so when I listen to The Wall, or I listen to Dark Side, or obviously going back earlier, there's something missing from the Gilmore stuff, but it's made up for by that soaring guitar. It really is. If you watch Gilmore live at Gdansk, you'll see what I'm talking about. Anyways, another example of, like, you know, I could complain about ticket prices or this or that, but it's like, no, I don't ever go see concerts, so I'm gonna not complain. And now I've got this thing to look forward to with my brother. So again, that's a set of glasses I chose. And by the way, part of the reason I can talk about these things is all the areas where I'm frugal as hell. Phoning my phone company once every 3 months to see if my rate is the best rate I could have. I think I have had 12 or 14 car insurance policies in the last 3 years because I'd get a speeding ticket, and then the day it would end, I'd call and negotiate that even though my year rotation of insurance wasn't up, could they please acknowledge that I'm now down to 2 tickets? So then I'm saving $1,000 there, if not more, et cetera, et cetera. And in a way, that frugality, I've talked about this when I got extra, you get daily money when you work as an actor to sort of cover your costs while you're abroad or shooting out of town. It's called per diem. It's like a stipend. Because obviously all your groceries at home are going to waste. So you're covered. And I would save my per diem. And Emily's like, how are you doing that? I'd be eating like fancy dinners or buying clothes every day. I've mentioned this on the podcast before. I came home and bought a bicycle. So I'm not spending that money. I'm just choosing to spend it all at once on something that's going to make me massively satisfied, not fritter it away. Which could make me satisfied too, depending on what the fritter is. Okay, I'm about to pull into the racetrack. I'll pick up with you guys in a bit. Okay, so we're back, everybody. What the... What? It's been about, I don't know, 11 hours since I last sort of cut off the beginning of this car cast. Since then, I've spent a couple hours on the racetrack, and I don't even know where to begin. I'm absolutely giddy with life right now. I'm on the 401. I'm going to put my window up here so you guys can hear me a bit better. Although I don't have AC in this car right now. And so I've got to blow the fan, although it's blowing hot air in because we're up over 30. I don't care. Oh, you know, there are second chances in this world. I destroyed my acting career when I was around 30 with booze and drugs. And I get to be an actor again. I've been given that chance. I've also worked for it. I've also been relentless in my pursuit of it since sort of crumbling everything that I've been lucky enough to build and have given. But part of what went away was sports cars and the ability to go to the racetrack, which is simply financial. So I'm there. I have an instructor. And, you know, my first couple laps, I'm really bad. I know how to drive the car well, but most of these are blind, high-speed turns. And, you know, it takes a while to trust myself, trust where I'm being told to go. And by the end of the day, I'm doing the best laps, not time-wise, for me. You can't even time there. It's highly illegal. If you're caught timing yourself, you can't have any kind of insurance or whatever. So I'm not in a race series, and it turns out up here, contrary to the LA stuff I was doing in Willow Springs, it's not even a time trial. In a weird way, with a lot of the stuff I've talked about on the podcast, it was almost more fun because everything was about the moment. And I put together some pretty shit hot laps. One of the great things about this track is it's such a high speed track that if somebody blows by you, let's say a worse driver in a better car, they're pretty much gone. So it's not a highly technical thing where you're going to catch them in the next few corners and kind of be pissed that they keep pulling on the straights and then you keep pulling them on the corners. So it's kind of like when someone's gone, they're basically gone. And then you get to kind of work through your own stuff again. So very in the moment, in the moment, in the moment, in the moment. also the fact that I'm doing about, let's see, we had to hit 200 kilometers an hour today on the track, no joke. You know, you got to be in the moment to do that. But this idea of the second chances, I think it really comes back to something we've talked about on this podcast, which is don't not do something because of how long it will take. The time will pass anyways. So I'm 30, quit the booze and drugs at 32. Everything's kind of sucking. I'm going broke. Nobody's hiring me. I'm either unable to date anybody or, you know, the girl I'm dating is not a match, but I don't see it because I have no spine and I have no sense of self. What an awful time. However, you know, I had a few baseline behaviors that I wouldn't let myself do again. And this is something, again, I don't remember exactly what I said this morning, but like that has to do with that pair of glasses. That has to do with, okay, so everything's not awesome, but you know what could make it worse. Now, for me at that time, it was mostly to do with booze and drugs, but as I've talked about on the podcast, eventually, I heard myself calling myself an asshole in the kitchen, in my head, and I realized I'd been doing this my whole life. Therefore, I could stop. It doesn't mean it's easy. I can stop if every single time for the rest of my life that I start doing that, my second thought is, don't talk to my friend like that. Look in a mirror as I'm going, you're such a fucking idiot. Look in the mirror and go, don't talk to my friend like that. And then start fresh. And if 40 seconds later, a new negative thought about myself kicks in, don't talk to my friend in the mirror like that. Now, you know how much I hate fake hippies or whatever that stuff is? It would be weird to look at myself in the mirror and go, you're the best driver that was on that track today. That's not true. That's a lie. So now I'm lying to myself. And what's interesting is that when I go, you're a fucking idiot because I drop a napkin, that's the lie. Now, for some reason, that made sense to do when I was younger. So maybe I was 10 or 20 or 15, and this weird sort of self-flagellation served me. I promise you, because look, we don't create this stuff out of nowhere, right? Like we don't become abusive or self-abusive because at one point it didn't serve us. We push someone around and a girl thinks it's cool, so we do it again and another girl thinks it's cool, or we don't feel as bad because our dad's pushing us around and it gives us a feeling of control and power, and we're young so we have none. That actually makes sense on paper. Does it make sense at age 30 though? 35, 40? If you're listening to this podcast, it probably doesn't. You know, you're probably watching Fox News or going rolling and looking for someone to pull a gun on tonight and not listening to this podcast. If that kind of behavior is somehow still serving you, basically the behavior of illusion. Because at a certain point, that will stop serving you. It stops serving me. And then I start seeking out lower companions. I start trying to hang out with people who don't elevate my highest and best self, but who basically pat my lower self on the shoulder and go, I got you. And it's like, yeah, there's always someone who'll got me. I can go start doing heroin again. And I'll find somebody who's like, it's all good, bro. You're doing fine. But they're not my higher companion. And that doesn't just have to be crackheads, drug addicts. We all have friends who are bringing out our lower selves, not our higher selves. Or at the very least, they're bringing out their lower selves. And it could be a bit of a boat anchor. Whatever, we can do what we want with our friends. But what I don't think we can do what we want with is ourselves. So I'm behaving in a way in that post-drinking, post-drugs phase that's actually really healthy. Because even though my actions, like the opportunities the world's giving me, aren't yet the ones that I think I deserve or aren't yet the ones that'll let me go race cars again, because for whatever reason I'm not booking the acting work and I'm not able to look life in the eye, because I still feel ashamed, which is basically what we're talking about, is at that time I felt a lot of shame over who I thought I was. And by the way, I wasn't as bad as I thought. Yeah, I was mucking up. Yeah, I wasn't treating. But really, it was me to me that was bad. It was me thinking I wasn't worth a good life. Nobody else minded much until they did. But why did it get that far? Because I didn't think I deserved better. I'll tell you this. Today, I deserve to be on that racetrack. But that doesn't negate, it grows the gratitude. When I actually pulled off the track and started weeping with gratitude and saying, thank you, God. Holy shit, I get to do this again. I get to be here. That doesn't mean that I didn't deserve to be there, but it means that I don't deserve to be there on my own. Because, you know, a lot of things have to happen before I book the job or get the photo client or get to direct the thing that lets me have the money, that then with my partnership with my girl, and then with the choices I want to make, and blah, 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 and then I get to go do this. So, you know, it's a choice. Big choice, by the way. You know, I've talked about how I get this car for cheaper than most people pay for their Hyundais, but I'm spending a lot more on it in reparations, and oh my God, I almost flew off the track. Woof! If you know Mosport, 5A, 5B. Anyways, came in way too hot. On purpose, tried to swing the ass end around on purpose. Then things got sideways, not on purpose. Then as I tried to grab the throttle on these rear engine cars, you got to throttle your way out of danger. I was already a bit too far gone. I just started going left, right, two wheels off. If anyone asks out at the track, it was only one. Picked up a pylon at one point, and somehow the pylon ended up right where it should have been. I didn't get too far off. We just kept going. And then after the session, they said, yeah, what happened? You spin? I said, nope. And he said, great. Have fun next time. It was close, though. That would have cost me a lot of money. Yesterday in the rain, 5 or 7 cars. Like, these aren't cheap cars. Like, you know, BMW M Series in the wall. One of them looks like a hatchback right now. So, you know, a lot of whatever. A lot of choice. A lot of allocation of resource. By the way, isn't a car cast especially, but isn't a Benzo podcast if we don't talk a little about traffic? HOV lanes in Toronto, man, do they bugger these up. I don't get why Toronto doesn't just read the fucking manuals of the things that they wisely are doing. We've talked about the scramble lights. Scramble lights are great, but not if you do them wrong. There's not a city in the world in which a high occupancy vehicle lane has to have 3 occupants. But for some reason, here it does. There's not a city in the world in which a high occupancy vehicle lane doesn't let you use a motorbike as a solo rider. But here, there's like 3 out of the 7 ones where you have to have a passenger. Makes no sense at all. Here's the thing. It's all about what's the point. The HOV lanes are basically empty. Because if Emily's got an audition on the East End at 11, and I have one at 2, I'm not gonna go with her, sit in the non-HOV traffic 3 hours early. But if we could use the HOV lane, we'd zip through in a third of the time, then I'd be kind of happy, work on my laptop while she auditions, then she waits while I audition. Now we've used one car in a quick lane, so we're not idling, to go there and back once. Instead, because the Toronto City Council are such fucking morons, and you have to have 3, now I'm like, eh, I don't feel like sitting in, yeah, you know what I mean. Like, so she goes, sits in traffic and idles, goes, does her audition, comes back, sits in traffic and idles, and then I do the same. One car going 2 ways in worse traffic, worse for the engine, worse for the environment, and the HOV lane's wide open because nobody's coordinating with 2 other people. Coordinating 3 people to go where you're going is a non-starter. So nobody's winning. What the fuck? I can't wait for the Pan Am Games. If you're listening, by the way, not from Toronto, we have the Pan Am Games here, which is why they did these lanes to try and alleviate traffic. Traffic's not that bad. It actually hasn't been crazy. It's just fucking, the idiocy means that you've basically cranked three lanes of traffic into two because no one gets to use the HOV lane because nobody read the manual. There's a manual for everything that'll tell you how to use it. Sadly, you have to read it, and that's a lost frickin' art. How many people, we've talked about this, will be like, you'll send them to their iPhone, and you'll see they're on, like, you know, their iPhone sending, tapping, Instagramming, Facebooking. But when you send them your address, which then highlights in blue, they'll text you back and go, how do I get there? It's like, wait, so what are you going to do now? For the first time in the last, let's say, 3 years, you're not going to use your digital device. You're going to, like I'm going to say, you know, an eagle will drop a worm at the third rock. And at that point, you turn right, follow the pathway up where the old man with the lantern will wave you on a sort of 45 degree. I mean, what do you mean, how do I get there? You get there by doing how you do everything else in the world, which is you tap a button and it tells you how. So people not only can't read manuals, they now can't even read the little phone that was supposed to make, like, reading maps, where you actually have to kind of find your start point yourself, figure out where you're going yourself. Heaven forbid it's on a book. So as you get to the top of the page and there's an arrow that says page 68, that's where the map picks up again. Wow, mind blowing. You get what I'm getting at, you know? It's like there's less and less chance of manuals being read every year. And, well, we know why our world is getting dumber, because people with university educations who take the time to grow, learn who they are, raise kids, have enough money to raise kids, and it's not about the money, but it's about the providing, you know, so they're having kids in their 30s, let's say, and some, you know, not all, by the way, some, generally speaking, less intelligent folks, you know, might be co-opted by religion, so they believe abortion's wrong when they're 16, and then all of a sudden, by the 30s, they're grandmothers, and now instead of having four members of your family tree when you're 39 and you've had two kids, there's, you know, you're a grandmother at 35, and, your kids had three kids, and now you're looking at a family tree of 14, and that first, you know, seed landing this and that might not have been into the brightest person from the brightest person. Accidents happen, but statistically, it's less intelligent people who are getting pregnant and keeping the kids. Look it up. It's math. If you're insulted by this, what are you gonna do? I'm not trying to be some fucking provocateur. I'm really not. It's hard in this world not to want to say things. And you know, I'm always trying to balance love and compassion with what it looks like something is, and am I allowed to say that's what something is? And the example I always use is the driving. Statistically, the worst drivers I see have a lot in common. But I'm supposed to ignore that. But ignoring it is good because I feel lighter, but not safer, if you know what I mean. So again, I mean, I hate shock jocks and the whole, like, let me push buttons to prove how, whatever. And it's like, however, sometimes I want to just go, right, but that person's going to cut me off, I think. And then they do. And now I'm safer. We're talking about profiling. I don't know why we're talking about profiling. I don't give a shit. I want to get off this. I'm going to go in and get some groceries right now. Because I didn't know that I was going to do this car cast, I didn't post for any questions. Life is good, my friends. And we're going to start picking this up more regularly. I keep promising that. Summer's hard, man. Because it's amazing. Like, summer in Toronto's a whole thing. Because you don't... I don't know. For some reason, summer feels different this year for me. I've nicknamed this the summer of heat, as you know, which is a bit lame because what does that even mean? But what it means for me, like right now I'm sitting in my car. There's no AC. I'm sweating. I've just been at the trap. Dripping sweat all day in like 32 degree sunshine with my cowboy hat and my t-shirt on, and I feel awesome. So instead of going, I'm hot, and trying to find AC every chance I get, summer heat's about digging in. So part of that digging in is going places on weekends, and me and Emily are saying yes to more events and stuff like that. And as such, you know, the podcast, all I'm saying is if you got a chance to go camping, or listen to my podcast, go camping. I'm actually making the same choice. I love you guys as always, and I'm excited to do the next one inside the house with a big ass pot of coffee. This is Chatting Between Takes, and that's a wrap.